A very good evening to all of you. How many of you are attending a program like this for the first time? If you could raise your hands. Okay, 1, 2, 3, 5. Okay. So I'm sure it's been a different experience. It's not the usual program I think you probably attend.
So probably there's many things that must have struck you or struck you as being something unusual. Many things, I'm sure. For example, you enter into the temple hall and you see the deities and you probably wonder what they're all about. Who are they and why do we worship idols or statues? Or what are these pictures that we see up on the wall? Of course, there's a very long history behind all these things. It's an ancient tradition that goes back to literally millions and millions of years. A tradition that is based upon a very, very deep philosophy, a very deep evolved spirituality. Before I go ahead, I just want to outline to you some of the basic principles of our beliefs so that you are aware of what practice we follow and why. The first, the most basic thing is that we understand from the Bhagavad Gita that we are an eternal spirit soul. We are not this body. When you look into the mirror, what you see is not you. It's your body. And the body is not you. The body is your vehicle. Inasmuch as if you sit in a BMW car, then you are not the BMW. You are the person sitting in the BMW. Although a person sitting in another car behind you might make a comment, just look at that BMW moving to the left. He means look at the driver within the BMW, but for convenience sake he uses the term look at the BMW. So for the sake of everyday convenience and communication, we identify ourselves with the body. But philosophically we should know that we are not this body. You have one kind of a body, I have another kind of body. Each of us is a unique kind of body. So really speaking, we understand that we are all spirit souls. We are all equal from that point of view. And this is something that has staggering implications, not only at the individual level, but also at the global level. At the individual level, it helps us to understand our real identity. It helps us to understand real happiness, to understand our real purpose in life. And at another level, it helps us to make sense of this world. I'm sure, like everybody else in this world, you're having a hard time making sense of what's going on in the world. So when you understand things from the spiritual point of view, things begin to fall into place. And furthermore, from the point of view of global peace and harmony, and unity of all the peoples of the world, and even beyond that, not just harmony amongst the people of the world, but amongst all living entities, in living in harmony with nature, with the universe. These are all the implications of understanding that I am not this body. When I think I am this body, I want to enjoy the body, and that becomes the predominant aim of my life, in a gross or subtle way. But when I understand I'm not this material body, I'm something more, I'm something beyond, I'm spiritual by nature, then our whole perspective to life changes. So that's the first and most important thing to start with. Secondly, an implication of the first point. The soul is eternal, the body is temporary. So, when the body ends, what happens to the soul? The body will end. We call that death. Then what happens to the soul? Well, the soul moves on to another body. Where we were in the last life, we do not know. Where we will be in the next life, we do not know. We could know if we prepare ourselves spiritually. But in general, we do not know. We have been in this cycle of birth and death from time immemorial, maybe millions, trillions of lives. We've been through all the species of life. Yes. We've been in animal bodies, we've been in bird bodies, we've been worms, we've been insects, we've been humans, we've been kings, we've been everything. In all these trillions of years, what an awesome thought. And how trifling and how insignificant and negligible everything seems to be when you look at it from that point of view. How petty are ambitions and desires of this one life when we understand that this is but a flash in eternity. So our life, which we consider all important in this body, is but a punctuation mark in the continuum that we call life. The soul is life, and it's punctuated by the different bodies we come into, one after the other, and another, and another. So then, that brings us to the third point. What determines the next body that the soul will occupy? Now we come to the point of karma. I'm sure you've all heard this phrase, karma. It's a much misunderstood phrase, but it's actually a very simple thing to understand. That there is a reaction for every action. Newton talked about it at a very physical level in the sciences. But even on the level of human activity, we understand that this principle applies. It's very logical. It's very rational. Because nothing happens without a cause. Nothing happens by chance. Everything has a cause, and therefore everything has an effect also. That's what the law of karma is. So there are laws of nature that determine what kind of reactions accrue to certain kinds of actions. Therefore, depending on the kinds of actions we perform when we have the human form of life, we get a life in the future. It could be a human form of life, a better human form of life, or the same, or maybe a lower status. It could be animal life, it could be bird life, it could be anything. The next point is, then what's the purpose of it all? Where are we now in this world? Is this all that there is to life in this world, or is there anything beyond? Then we talk about the beyond. What we experience right now, either directly through our eyes and ears, or through the extensions of our eyes and ears, which are our instruments, our technology, which the scientists use to probe the limits of the universe and the depths of the atom. These are merely extensions of our senses. But beyond all that we can perceive with our senses and with our science, there is another world. This world is called the material world, because it's made up of matter. We are spiritual. We, the soul, are spiritual. And we are in a world which is material. So it's an incompatible combination. Something spiritual in a material atmosphere doesn't work. Just like if you are in a place where you're really uncomfortable, you feel out of place. You don't like the people around you, you don't like the situation, you don't like the atmosphere. You just want to go away from there, but you don't have a choice, so you stay there for some time. Let's say you're doing a job, and you really don't like the people around you, you don't like the job, but you need the job. So you work, but you know it's incompatible. Similarly here, for the soul, it's incompatible to be with this material body, to be in a material world. Something like the fish out of the water. You take a fish out of the water and give the fish a nice Bentley car, the latest fashionable clothes, give him a lot of money, and the latest electronic gadgetry, whatever you like, will the fish be happy? No. All the fish needs is to be put in its natural environment, which is water. That's all. Once it's in water, it doesn't really need much. It just needs a few worms and a few bits of grass and so on, and that's what survives on happily. But you deprive the fish of its natural environment, bring it out and give it everything else in the world, the fish will not be satisfied. So similarly, because we are spiritual entities and we are presently engaged, so to speak, trapped in the material atmosphere, no amount of material facilities and things and the pleasures of this world will really give us happiness. So therefore, what we see around us, the world, is not everything. There is a world beyond. This material world is created, maintained, and destroyed. Everything in this world that's material is temporary, like our bodies, is created, maintained for a while, destroyed. Everything that you see around you follows this principle, including the universe itself. It's created, maintained, destroyed. And this goes on eternally in a cycle. So here you have, from the spiritual point of view, a huge cosmology also. So then that brings us to a point that where does the soul belong to then? Now that we've considered the nature of this world, where does the soul belong really? Is there an atmosphere or a world or a dimension of existence where the soul finds a compatible situation? Yes, that's the spiritual world, the world beyond this universe. And the spiritual world, by definition, exists eternally. It was never created, it will never be destroyed. And the soul is also like that. It was never created, it will never be destroyed. So the soul belongs to that spiritual realm. But somehow or other, it is here. We are here in this material atmosphere. So our goal of life is to reach that spiritual atmosphere where we can actually be happy. So we are here in this material world like the fish out of the water, and we are hankering to be there in the spiritual atmosphere, but we don't know that we are looking for the spiritual world. So who lives in the spiritual world is God. And we understand God to be Krishna. By Krishna, which is a Sanskrit word, we mean the all-attractive source of everything. Now we come to the question of God. Does God exist? Yes, indeed, He does. How do we define God? Very simple definition. God is the origin of everything. The ultimate origin of everything. That's God. Now please note, we are not defining God in terms of religious faiths. This is a problem in the current world, in the current day's world today. People say, this is my God, that's your God. My God is better than your God. And so we have quarrels. We have hatred, bigotry, and so many problems because of which people come to the point when they say, I'd rather not have anything to do with religion because religion means quarrel. Religion means hatred. But that would be an injustice we'll do to ourselves, because we'd be throwing the baby out with the bathwater. Because there are problems in the way religion is understood and practiced today, we needn't throw religion out. What we need is the proper spiritual understanding of religion. So if we define God as the scriptures do define, as the ultimate origin of everything, we're talking of one supreme being. We're not talking of a Muslim God, a Christian God, a Hindu God, or any type of God. We're talking of God per se. God, period. We don't identify God as being belonging to a particular religion. That's divisions that have evolved within human society. But God is not a Muslim or a Hindu or a Christian or anything else. God is God. Similarly, the spiritual world is a spiritual world. Nobody has a monopoly there in terms of one's faith. Religious faith, I mean. Anyone who fulfills the criteria can enter into that spiritual world. Inasmuch as when you apply for a visa to another country, if you fulfill the certain criteria that the embassy lays down, you get the visa. Doesn't matter what your background is. Similarly, no matter what our ethnicity, our linguistic background, our religious background, our socio-economic background, or anything, if we fulfill certain criteria, we can also enter into that eternal kingdom where Krishna resides. And why is he called Krishna? Why is the source of everything called Krishna? Because the word Krishna means all attractive. And within this one phrase, all attractive, is included all traits and attributes that can possibly be attractive in anyone. Whether it's beauty, it's mercy and compassion, it is strength, it is knowledge, it is fame, it is renunciation. Whatever it is in this world that attracts us to people, that makes people attractive to us, all reside in this one fascinating personality in an unlimited degree. So that by definition is God, Krishna. And he resides there with his eternal group of associates in his eternal kingdom. Somehow or the other, we are here in forgetfulness of him. And the process of reviving our link with him is called yoga. The word yoga comes from the Sanskrit word yuj, which means to link up, or to link up with God. Of late, the word yoga has become very popular in the world. However, I have mixed feelings about this popularity because of the way it's understood. Generally, it appears that people now equate yoga only with certain physical exercises and breathing exercises. It's all right to do these things for good health and so on. And we also do it sometimes. But if you disconnect yoga practice from some higher spiritual goal, which is actually the essence of it, then we keep only the form and the shell, and we do away with the substance, with the essence. So it is very important in yoga that we don't reduce it to just an empty shell of physical exercises, that we understand that there's something deeper. And in our process of yoga, we link with Krishna with love. Therefore, it's called bhakti yoga. Bhakti means love. So the relationship between the soul and Krishna is one of love. Constitutionally, that is our relationship. And because we are separated from Krishna in terms of our consciousness, not from Krishna's point of view, but from our point of view, therefore we experience a vacuum. That vacuum manifests itself as unhappiness and distress and misery in so many ways. And therefore we look to fill that vacuum by doing many, many things. We look for it in money, we look for it in recreation, we look for it in, sports and sex or money or whatever else we look for. Because we think these things will fill that vacuum. I will get real pleasure and real happiness in these things. But again, coming back to the analogy of the fish, it won't help us. It is only when we re-establish our eternal connection with Krishna, our original and ultimate source, the ultimate abode of real love and beauty and kindness, can we actually attain real joy, real love, and freedom from death. Who doesn't want these things? But these are not fairy tales. They are actually reality. And bhakti yoga is a process that can situate us in reality even as we live within this material world. And then when we leave this world, we will go back to that spiritual kingdom where Krishna is waiting for us, for every one of us. And we will live there eternally, ever and ever after. And the heart of bhakti yoga, in this day and age especially, is to chant the holy names of Krishna. Krishna makes himself available to all of us in many ways. One, principally, is through his holy names, by chanting which we connect ourselves to him. Second is through his holy books, like the Bhagavad Gita, the Srimad Bhagavatam, which give us a lot of information about him. Third, through the company of his devotees, through whom we can understand information about Krishna, and also through his deity, the deities that you saw in the temple. The deities may appear to be just statues made of stone or marble, but Krishna, the omnipotent, omniscient, supreme personality of Godhead, manifests himself in the form of the deity out of his mercy upon his devotees in order to receive their service so that they can proceed on the path of developing a personal loving relationship with him. So the deity gives us an opportunity to serve him and thereby develop a relationship of love with him. It's very hard to love someone you can't see, someone you don't know. When you don't know what someone looks like, how can you love that person? So very kindly Krishna appears in the form of the deity. And finally, I want to speak a word about the scripture. The scripture is Krishna's word. It is transmitted down through a disciplic succession of saintly people. And the word comes down to us unadulterated. And that's how we get information which otherwise would not be possible for us to obtain. It is beyond the purview of our science, beyond the purview of our technology and our senses. But that's something that we receive in the holy line of great spiritual masters. His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, whose deity you probably saw as you entered the temple room on the right-hand side, has been the latest in the chain of great spiritual teachers. At the age of 70, he left the holy place of Vrindavan in India to go to America to spread this message of divine love, bhakti yoga. And even though he was 70 years old and had only $7 in his pocket and didn't know where he would stay, what he would do, how he would survive, he took such a great risk to go there at an advanced age, had two heart attacks on the ship, in a cargo ship, for which he had managed to procure a free ticket. He reached America, and within 12 years, he established many, many centers, published hundreds of books, millions of copies were distributed worldwide. Practically every center, every country in the world had a presence. The name Krishna became known in every country. Nothing short of a miracle. And such miracles are possible by Krishna's empowerment and his grace. So this is a wonderful opportunity for the people of this world to unite on the platform of love. Love is the highest force in the world, the highest power in the world. Love not of this world, the love of the world beyond, the spiritual world. If everybody comes together on the path of bhakti and the path of love for Krishna, this can unite the world. And we will rise beyond our bigotries, beyond our hatred for each other, beyond the petty divisions that we make amongst our societies. And we will all work together for the pleasure of Krishna and live a happy life. The spiritual world can manifest here if we live like what people do in the spiritual world. And then when we die, and when death comes, we go back to Krishna's abode. And that's the sum and substance of what this temple is all about. I talked about a visa, and getting a visa to go to a different country. Well, this is the embassy. This is one of the embassies of Krishna's kingdom. So there are some requirements you have to follow. So when you follow the process, then eventually you get the visa to go to the spiritual world, Krishna's kingdom. I invite you to embark on this very, very exciting and blissful journey. I assure you, you will never be the loser. It will be a voyage of discovery, a voyage of bliss, a voyage that will bring you into avenues that you've perhaps never experienced before, and you will never regret it, and you will want to share it with others. Thank you very much for your kind attention. Hare Krishna.